Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if this is going to be unsurpassed, penetrating input. Isn't that on? It is on?
It's on.
I don't know if this is going to be a perfect penetrating and so forth. I want to, before I give my talk, I want to give you some sense of my wanderings. As you know, most of you know, I've been doing the Tassajara practice period, co-leading the practice period with the present abbot, Yogi and Steve Stuckey. And you know, I'm only leading half the practice period, so I'm supposed to be here half of each week, month. So this half, I got sidetracked to Japan to attend the 500th anniversary of Rinzuin, Suzuki Roshi's temple. So I went, and people said, "Did you have a good time?" but it was 3 days of ceremonies, one after the other, and each with the same format. After a while, I learned the format. And I gave a little talk. I led one of the little ceremonies. That was nice. So I'll be going back to Tassajara again next week for 2 weeks, and then I'll come back in November, last half of November. And then I'll go back in December for 2 weeks and come back after Sasin. So, but today we're having Sajiki ceremony. It used to be called Sagaki ceremony. Gaki means preta, or hungry ghosts ceremony. This may seem like an esoteric ceremony, but actually it's just like ceremonies all over the world, in every culture. Ancient ceremonies, ancient cultures, I mean, used to commune with the deceased. Nowadays, we kind of, you know, don't pay much attention to that. So we do this. It's like a communion with the deceased. There's a difference between ghosts and demons. Halloween is the Christian equivalent of Sagaki or Sajiki ceremony. I think we changed the name from Sagaki to Sajiki because Sagaki was more like for Japanese people. Sajiki is more wide, which includes, it's not an exclusive kind of ceremony, but more open to everyone. So, demons are loose in the world. And ghosts, I mean, demons have some ulterior motives, bad motives. They have a tendency to find a body and invade it, take it over. This morning on my way to Zazen, on the public radio, there was an interview with the man who, the author of The Exorcist, that came out in 1969. And he was talking about the the host said, well, please read a passage from The Exorcist. It's about this little girl who was invaded by a demon. And he read the passage, and the passage was, the psychiatrist was talking to the little girl, and he called her by name. I can't remember her name, Megan or something like that. Not quite right. But he called her by name, and she answered, I am not Megan, I'm the devil. ghosts are more innocent, actually. Ghosts are, they don't have ulterior motives, they're just out there, because a ghost is a disembodied spirit that can't find its way, can't find its home. There's no place to alight. So both demons and ghosts, you know, are all around us, or in us. As a matter of fact, we are ghosts and demons. It's not just the other world. So this kind of brings the two worlds, this ceremony kind of brings the two realms together. The realm that we think is the realm that we live in, and ourselves, and then there's all of the disembodied spirits, either demons or ghosts, who are hungering for something. And of course we're all hungry ghosts, hungering for something. We eat with our ears, we eat with our eyes, we eat with our nose, our tongue, our touch. And we're always looking for something to eat with our senses. And we're never satisfied. So in the ceremony, we offer something to satisfy whoever needs satisfaction.
Can you please
slightly
louder? We can't hear you.
I can't hear you. I heard you. You want me to speak louder? Well, this thing's supposed to be up. So, I'm going to read you a little something about Halloween, the origin of Halloween. You may know the origin of Halloween. It had its beginnings in ancient pre-Christian Celtic festival of the dead. The Celtic peoples, who were once found all over Europe, divided the year by four major holidays. According to their calendar, the year began on a day corresponding to November 1st, on our present calendar. It's not called All Saints Day. The date marked the beginning of winter. Since they were pastoral people, it was a time when cattle and sheep had to be moved to closer pastures, and all livestock had to be secured for the winter months. Crops were harvested and stored. The date marked both an ending and a beginning in an eternal cycle. The festival observed at this time was called Samhain. It was the biggest and most significant holiday of the Celtic year. The Celts believed that at the time of Samhain, more so than at any other time of the year, the ghosts of the dead were able to mingle with the living. Because at Samhain, the souls of those who had died during the year traveled into the other world. People gathered to sacrifice animals, fruits, and vegetables. They also lit bonfires in honor of the dead, to aid them on their journey and to keep them away from the living. On that day, all manner of beings went abroad, ghosts, fairies, and demons, all part of the dark and dread, keeping them away from the living. So when we have, in our Sajiki ceremony, the altar is on the other side of the Zendo, in order to keep the ghosts and demons away from the altar. So Samhain became the Halloween we are familiar with when Christian missionaries attempted to change the religious practices of the Celtic people. In the early centuries of the first millennium AD, before missionaries such as St. Patrick and St. Columcille converted them to Christianity, The Celts practiced an elaborate religion through their priestly caste, the Druids, who were priests, poets, scientists, and scholars all at once. As religious leaders, ritual specialists, and bearers of learning, the Druids were not unlike the very missionaries and monks who were to Christianize their people and brand them evil devil worshippers. As a result of their efforts to wipe out pagan holidays, such as Samhain, the Christians succeeded in effecting major transformations in it. In 601, Pope Gregory I issued a now famous edict to his missionaries concerning the native beliefs and customs of the peoples he hoped to convert. Rather than try to obliterate native peoples' customs and beliefs, the Pope instructed his missionaries to use them. If a group of people worshipped a tree, rather than cut it down, he advised them to consecrate it to Christ and allow its continued worship. In terms of spreading Christianity, this is a brilliant concept and it became a basic approach used in Catholic missionary work. Church holy days were purposely set to coincide with native holy days. Christmas, for instance, was assigned the arbitrary date of December 25th, because it corresponded with the midwinter celebration of many peoples. Likewise, St. John's Day was set on the summer solstice. Samhain, with its emphasis on the supernatural, was decidedly pagan. While missionaries identified their holy days with those observed by the Celts, they branded the earlier religion's supernatural deities as evil and associated them with the devil, as representatives of their rival religion. Druids were considered evil worshippers of devilish or demonic gods and spirits. The Celtic underworld inevitably became identified with the Christian hell. The effects of this policy were to diminish but not totally eradicate the beliefs of the traditional gods. Celtic beliefs in supernatural creatures persisted, while the church's more deliberate attempts to define them as being not merely dangerous but malicious followed the older religion that went into hiding and were branded as witches. The Christian Feast of All Saints was assigned to November 1st. The day honored every Christian saint, especially those that did not otherwise have a special day devoted to them, and this feast day was meant to substitute for Samhain, to draw the devotion of the Celtic peoples and finally to replace it forever. That did not happen, but the traditional Celtic deities diminished their status, becoming fairies and leprechauns and more recent traditions. I'm going to skip a lot of this. So it all became Halloween. And in old England, cakes were made for the wandering souls, and people went a soul in for these soul cakes. Halloween, a time of magic, also became a day of divination with a host of magical beliefs. For instance, if persons hold a mirror on Halloween and walk backwards down the stairs to the basement, the face that appears in the mirror will be the next lover. You better be careful. The face you see may be your own. Virtually all present Halloween traditions can be traced to the ancient Celtic Day of the Dead. So in Mexico, you know, we have the Day of the Dead and so forth. Halloween is a holiday of many mysterious customs, but each one has a history, or at least a story behind it. The wearing of costumes, for instance, and roaming from door to door demanding treats can be traced to the Celtic period and the first few centuries of the Christian era, when it was thought that the souls of the dead were out and around, along with fairies, witches, and demons. Offerings of food and drink were left out to placate them. As the centuries wore on, people began dressing like these dreadful creatures, performing antics in exchange for food and drink. This practice is called mumming, from which the practice of trick-or-treating evolved. To this day, witches, ghosts, and skeletal figures of the dead are among their favorite disguises. Halloween also retains some features that harken back to the original harvest holidays of Samhain, such as the customs of bobbing for apples and carving vegetables, as well as fruits, nuts, and spices, ciders associated with the day. Spices, cider, and pumpkins. So today Halloween is becoming again blah blah blah. So now Sagaki, I'm going to read it short. Sagaki is a traditional Japanese ceremony for feeding the hungry ghosts. In Buddhist iconography, hungry ghosts are creatures who are extremely hungry but have very narrow throats, so to the gaki, so that their hunger can never be satisfied. Hungry ghosts are entirely occupied by the pain of their own appetite, unable to consider the Dharma. In the Sagaki ceremony, Sajiki, these hungry ghosts are offered nourishment with the hope of satisfying their hunger and releasing them. In addition, the Sajiki ceremony is a universal memorial service for the deceased. In the Berkeley Zen Center, the Sagaki ceremony is combined with Halloween traditions. The ceremony has the spirit of a party with costumes, noisemakers, food, decorations. And for a nice essay on the history and meaning of the ceremony, see the October newsletter. Costumes are encouraged. Children are welcome. After the ceremony, refreshments will be served. Anybody have a question? It all got taken care of. Yes.
So how? So we also use it to recognize or commemorate or something people who've died recently in the past year. We give out their names, and so how does that tie in with what the traditions that you just told us about?
Well, that's what traditions is about.
So it's not just about demons and ghosts, but...
Well, no. I mean, we have an extreme called demon and an extreme called ghost. But in between, this is communion with the deceased. So during the ceremony, we read off the names of the people who died this year. And then people can add names, ad lib. So it's a memorial and a communion. That's the way Sagaki is. And it's, but, in an extreme sense, it's ghosts and demons. Because all those things are combined. Lord?
What about the people who can never be satisfied even though they have billions and billions of dollars? Can we feed them somehow so they can finally be satisfied?
Well, they're the ones that need the most pity. But they're also the demons, either realizing it or not, because they're so hungry they can never be satisfied. So we don't express our sympathy. I mean, our pity for them directly. But we could. This is a ceremony to feed the... We should offer a dollar to each one. To the 1%. I know you need this worse than I do.
Was Sagaki a Buddhist ceremony, or was it a Japanese cultural tradition that was taken?
No, it's a Buddhist ceremony. Buddhist ceremony, yeah. I mean, I don't know. There may have been something Shinto or indigenous there, but basically it's a Buddhist ceremony.
I think one of the responses that came up for me when Rory asked the question had to do with how does one know what it feels like to be fed?
Again?
Fed.
Oh, fed.
And if one hungers, then the extinction of that has to be something that really resonates. It says, oh, this is it.
Well,
in some form of enlightenment.
This is symbolic. It's symbolic. We offer, you know, some fruit and vegetables on the table, on the little altar, you know, and chant for their, you say, please come and be nourished.
But I'm trying to address what our whole culture is in need of.
Oh.
That we're all sensing that there's never enough.
I'll tell you what it's in need of. There is, and I've told you this story before. Heaven and hell. The difference between heaven and hell. In heaven, I mean, in hell, there's this long table, and all these people are sitting around the long table. And there's a huge feast on the table. And everybody has a set of chopsticks. But the chopsticks are so long that when they get the food, they can't get it in their mouth. Right? Heaven is exactly the same place, with the same people, with the same food, with the same chopsticks. But when they pick up the food, they put it in the mouth of the person across the table. Mm-hmm. That's what this country is in need of. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I'm reminded of a line that I've loved for years that I think is pertinent, and it simply says, you can never get enough of what you don't really want.
Yeah, on a different subject, could you say a few words about what it's like for you to be at Tassajara, and maybe give us a taste of what the practice period is like there, and being that there's a number of
Well, we get up at 3:50 in the morning, the wake-up bell, and I almost have enough time to do my stretches before going to the Zendo, and which is just about like we do here. And then there's the morning service, and three periods of, it's an hour zazen, then a half hour of zazen. And then service and breakfast and break and soji. And then three periods of zazen. Unless there's a lecture. And then that's pretty much the morning, except, and then there's lunch in the Zendo. And then there's a break, and then there's a work meeting, and then people work until 4:30. And then there's bath time and exercise time. And then there's dinner, and then there's zazen, and then there's bed. That's basic, but then there's other activities, you know, that go on, but that's basic.
There's also study, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah, there's study. In the morning. Yeah, it's really time for us to go. Or stay. Or so everyone is invited. And tomorrow we'll explain.